Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
Laguna Beach, KX93.5.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that the opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX93.5, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. It is November 22nd, Sunday. It's a little bit after 8 o'clock. If you haven't already fixed your clocks, folks, you've probably got larger problems in life. But let's move on. It is about 66 degrees out there, going up to a high of 80 degrees today. It's supposed to be a little bit cooler this week coming up, especially on Tuesday and Wednesday. And for Turkey Day, it will be about 63 degrees, and this is the Thanksgiving edition of Laguna Roundtable with Righty Jim and Dr. Ari. So hopefully with the 63 degrees on Thanksgiving, hopefully the winter will be arriving before too many Lagunans put their Christmas lights up, because it just looks a little screwy if you've got Christmas lights up while you're eating your turkey. We're going to be covering a number of different topics this morning. We'll be talking about the Paris and Malaya attacks, the Syrian refugee crisis, the college campus's love of microaggressions, the Laguna short-term rental ban. There was a city council meeting this week, and we'll be talking about what the outcome of that meeting was. And in our topics, we'll be talking about how you beat ISIS. And for our on the table, Dr. Ari will be talking about fear itself, which every day we have to live when we wake up and find Barack Obama is still our president. But that notwithstanding, here is... As I said, I'm Righty Jim. Here is my co-host, Dr. Ari.
Good morning,
Dr. Ari. You wanted to jump in real quickly to some college football, I believe.
Yeah.
And then remind us again where you went to college. Where are you an alumnus of?
I'm a Michigan man through and through.
So, of course, you want to talk about the USC loss or the UCLA victory, or was there something else in Wolverine land that was of higher precedence?
Well, Ohio State losing to Michigan State.
Okay.
So
for all of you Ohio State fans out there, the cards and letters go to lagunaroundtable@gmail.com. But go ahead.
No, you know, I'm still laughing over here over our weather, you know, 80 degrees, and we're worried about 63 degrees for the high later on this week in Thanksgiving. I was watching some of the college football warm-ups yesterday, and I saw Iowa City. Apparently, they got almost a foot of snow.
Yeah, so that was supposed to be the blowing wind and snow bowl or whatever.
So they were showing photographs of the stadium yesterday and the seats covered in all this snow and the ice coming down off of the seats. And all I could do was laugh when I went out in the afternoon yesterday. It was close to 80 degrees. I was wearing a light shirt, and I felt like I should have been wearing my shorts and hanging out at the beach here. It's so beautiful today.
Absolutely. But that is the advantages of autumn in Southern California. It can be warm one day and cool the next and then warm the next.
But college football, most important of all, college football yesterday, Michigan State went into Columbus, Ohio and defeated Ohio State. And then after the game, some of the Ohio State players actually kind of went off on the coaching decisions. They were Ezekiel Elliott was giving the coaching staff a hard time that
needed more carries.
He needed more carries. And then he said he was going to turn pro next year. He's going to go pro a year early as soon as he's eligible. And then Cardell Stewart, the backup quarterback who actually played in the national championship game as a starter and led them to victory, also announced that he's thinking about going pro next year. And I think what wound up undoing the Ohio State Buckeyes was this pure selfishness of their players. And, you know, I think there's a lot of work to be done by Urban Meyer to get them back to where they need to be. But I had a hard time personally because I have a lot of friends who are both Michigan State alumni and other friends who are Ohio State alumni. And although it was in Michigan's best interest to root for an Ohio State victory, rooting for Ohio State was not exactly in my DNA. So I don't know that I affected the outcome at all, but I was very happy for my Michigan State friends. They were beside themselves. They were absolutely beside themselves yesterday when the game ended as it did.
So. Okay, so real quick, what do you think? Because every week now the teams that are that would be selected for the playoff brackets are announced on Tuesday. I believe it's at 4:00 Pacific. What are your four teams for this week's, and you can't say Michigan, for this week's Final Four, shall we say?
No, it's not going to be Michigan. I think you wind up with Clemson. Let's see. Clemson, perhaps Notre Dame. They may squeak in there.
Oh, they were four last week.
Yeah. Gosh.
Alabama?
Alabama's got to be in the conversation.
One loss. What about Iowa with no losses?
Iowa, but Iowa's played a really weak schedule.
Is Iowa going to replace? Yeah, well, so did Ohio State. Is Iowa going to replace Ohio State in the standings?
I think they will, but they're going to have to get through Michigan State or Michigan in all likelihood.
The conference championship.
In the conference championship.
And
when I say in all likelihood, it's not going to be Michigan in all likelihood. It's going to be Michigan State. And Michigan State has to get through Penn State first.
Yeah, that shouldn't be too much of a challenge. And what about the undefeated Oklahoma State Cowboys?
Again, you know, I don't see them having a strong enough schedule to carry them through, not over Iowa. If Iowa can defeat Michigan State or Michigan, whoever is the representative from the Big Ten East, then they certainly have earned their way into a national championship game.
I think this day, 2 weeks hence, will be the day that the Final Four will be announced. And if they come out before we're off the air, we will gladly announce them. And Ari will cringe when Ohio State, there'll be no Pac-12 representatives. That's a little frustrating. But let's move on to less light news. Let's kick off the news this week with the Paris and Mali attacks. Unfortunately, we were off last week when we were not involved in the Paris attacks. We just happened to be off, just coincidentally. Good choice by my co-host here to play the interview with the consul general from the Pakistani consulate in L.A. Quite fitting for the timing with that, with the attacks by the ISIS troops in Paris. 130 dead is the latest. And then on Friday, a group known as the Al-Qaeda of the Maghreb took responsibility for the attacks at the Radisson in Mali, which left anywhere between 18 and 20 dead, depending upon how many of the attackers you count in there. The problem, so now, to be honest, Ari, what was the first thing you heard when you heard that gunmen had taken control of the Radisson in the capital of Mali?
Well, I assumed it was, again, either an Al-Qaeda or an ISIS operatives.
But there. That's not the real big question. There's a Radisson in Mali?
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know, they're like weeds. They're everywhere.
Who would have thought there was a Radisson in Mali?
There, you know.
So if I ever go to Mali, at least I know I can go there. I mean, at least I know that there's some sort of a four-star hotel. But sorry, I'm a little more serious.
I don't really know that much about Mali other than it's a Western African nation. Technically, I guess they're probably considered sub-Saharan.
I think that's probably pretty accurate, yeah.
But they're, you know,
they're south of Algeria, for those of you that are geographically challenged.
Right. You know, it sounds like someplace in the South Pacific, like Bali, not Mali.
This sounds like somewhere that's got a lot of sand, a lot of nothing.
Yeah. You know, my question was, you know, why the hell Mali, in all honesty?
It was interesting, though. There were a number of the hostages were Chinese because the Chinese are doing large infrastructure projects in Mali. So it's interesting to see the Chinese are spending billions on African, all over Africa, North Africa, Central Africa, Southern Africa, not South Africa, but Southern Africa, infrastructure projects. They're doing a lot to basically align themselves with those African countries by doing infrastructure projects in exchange for the rights to minerals and oil and various materials, lumber, that they are going to need to continue to build their economy. So they're getting themselves quite entrenched in Africa, but that's not really what we were talking about.
I think this really goes to show the absolute sickness and depravity of the people that we're confronted with in the world today, because you have people like the Chinese who are coming in and they're helping to build up the African infrastructure. You know, we have American aid workers.
But they're still infidels. They're not Muslims, so they're infidels to these terrorists.
Well, but even Muslims who are not of the same particular sect, as these folks are considered to be infidels. They're non-believers.
Well, only for the ISIS people, not for the Al-Qaeda group. Because the Al-Qaeda group is going around and questioning people. If you could recite Quran verses, they were letting them out.
Right.
So if they were deemed to be true Muslims and could cite the Quran, they were letting them out. And in fact, because they were so tied to their ideology and their basically death to the Western infidels, that they actually had, I believe, the head of Mali intelligence, their version of the CIA, in the hostages, in the 190 hostages they had at one point. And because he could cite Quran verses and he was Islamic, they let him out. So, you know, oops. I mean, this guy's sole purpose is to hunt down and kill Islamic terrorists. And they let their number one enemy, in a sense, if you're an Islamic terrorist, go simply because he fit their ideology. So it was kind of a oops. You kind of let that one go through there, guys.
Well, but you know, they're not exactly hung up on the details. But the point is that, you know, we have American aid workers who go around the world. We have
Absolutely.
Doctors Without Borders, who are, in my opinion, some of the great humanitarians of our time. They're so selfless to go into places like Afghanistan or wherever
or Mali.
Need might be, or Mali for that matter, to help other human beings in need. And we see time and time again that they're taken and they're destroyed. I mean, these are the kinds of people that the world ought to be celebrating,
sure.
not destroying. But it goes to show that they have nothing to offer the world. They have nothing to offer in terms of decency. They have nothing to offer in terms of humanity. There's no compassion. There's no empathy for anyone who is not exactly as they are. And I think that's going to wind up being their great undoing, because they are turning the world against them. To go after the French, as they've done recently, I understand the opportunities to strike in an open society, but I think they're quickly turning the French against them. And by the way, this week I heard a new term. Have you heard the term Daesh?
Yes.
Okay.
That is what the rest of the world
is calling
calls ISIS or ISIL.
Right. And the reason is that it sounds like the Arabic word for Daesh, D-A-E-S, instead of D-A-E-S-H. So it's not quite that the sh sound at the end, not quite as hard. But it literally translates into one who crushes something underfoot. And it's considered to be somewhat of a pejorative or an insult to the folks from ISIS. But I
yes.
know in this country we often hear conservatives want to refer to ISIS and other Islamists as this, as Islamic terrorists.
Yes.
And I think by...
Because they are.
Changing the narrative. Well, they misuse Islam.
Okay, short quiz. For ISIS or ISIL, what does the first I stand for?
Islamic.
Thank
but
you.
That's, yes, but they're also calling themselves a state, and they're not a state either.
Well,
so,
there's a question about that. I've debated that with people on Twitter. I agree with that, but they basically control territory. They have border checkpoints. They have checkpoints. They don't really have borders. They collect taxes, tolls. They administrate food restaurants for sanitary and halal. They collect taxes. They collect taxes. So they're either a very well organized group of bandits, or they're in a sense a state. They're not a de jure state. They're a de facto state. But in many ways, they're considered pretty much a state, and they're the ruling authority. If you're talking about 2/3 of Syria and about 1/4 of Western Iraq.
But I think one of the things that we have to be careful about in this battle with extremism is allowing the
extremists
to own the narrative. And by allowing them to own the narrative and to call themselves an Islamic state is to couch this battle against them as a war between Islam and Christianity, which it is not. It's a battle between maniacs and humanity.
I just look at it as a battle between good and evil.
Well, that's, you know, maniacs and humanity, and you don't allow them. This, I think, is one of the great challenges, because one of the things we wanted to talk about today is how do you deal with people who will die for some maniacal idea?
And in our topic section, we will talk about that.
Well,
but
part of that is not allowing them to own the narrative. You have to own the narrative and how you present the information out to the public.
Sure.
And I think that's where... we're making a mistake.
Oh, by the way, they've created another enemy after the Paris attacks. The online hacker group Anonymous has declared cyber war on ISIS. And while that may sound like somewhat of a joke, it actually is, you know, they're not dying for their cause. But that is something that is relevant because Anonymous is a fairly powerful group of hackers, black hat and white hat hackers. And they've already claimed to have taken down 6,000 ISIS Twitter accounts. And while, again, that seems somewhat silly, ISIS has been very, very successful in social media, by far more than Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda lives in caves and literally were passing floppy disks of messages around back in the mid, 10 years ago. And they're, if you think you've got a problem getting internet or getting 4G coverage in Laguna, guess what? In the caves of Afghanistan, there is no 4G. You know what? You're not even getting 3G in the caves of Afghanistan. So they're not very technologically advanced, whereas ISIS is very technologically advanced and very social media savvy. And that is how they recruit almost all of their, especially the Westerners that they're recruiting, is via social media. They're very well versed, and they've used it very successfully, if you can say such a thing, for their recruiting efforts, especially for getting youngsters and younger people. And the somehow they recruit these silly 16 and 18-year-old girls in Britain to come over and be, ISIS war brides, for lack of a better phrase. Unfortunately, it's sad, but they are very good at it. So that there is some relevance to that.
Yeah, and they do it brilliantly, and I don't think it's a mistake to call their use of social media very successful. It's successful in what their goals are, what they're trying to do. So from that standpoint, no question it's successful, but losing your internet service, man, you don't want to do that. You really don't want to upset.
I guess unless you put a cell tower on a goat, I guess Al-Qaeda out in the Afghanistan caves are out of luck. So let's move on to the Syrian refugee crisis. And President Obama, as he was doing his world tour 2015, was in Turkey. Oddly enough, he was within about, 25 miles of the Syrian border. So basically, if he took a plane, it took a wrong turn. If Air Force One took the wrong turn, which I'm sure it doesn't, and headed out over Syria, that would have been a little dangerous. But then he's also now off to one of his homelands of Indonesia. And also somewhere else in the South Pacific or in Southeast Asia that he went to. I don't remember where it was, but he has talked about and has been, somewhat derogatory to Republican governors who do not wish to take in 100,000 Syrians that the government is wishing to bring in as part of the Syrian refugee crisis. Now, there was a Syrian passport found next to one of the dead terrorists who blew himself up outside the Stade de France. In the Paris attacks last Friday, or a week ago Friday. The Syrian passport was found to be a fake, but it was still used by somebody, and it was checked through Greek passport control.
Right.
It was used by someone to enter the EU on a fake Syrian passport. So whether the person was actually a Syrian refugee or somebody who was able to get Syrian documents, because probably they've been compromised now, such as Syrian control over that sort of thing is pretty bad right now because of the Bashar Assad government and lack thereof. Right now, the president said wants to take 100,000 refugees. There are ample and well-founded concern that some of these may be terrorists. There are 800,000 Syrians right now in Germany, and ISIS has stated months and months ago that they plan to use the refugee crisis as a way to smuggle in their fighters to Western Europe and America.
Right.
So, Dr. Ari, why does the right or why does the left found this to be think of this as an ill-conceived and quote-unquote, blatantly racist fear-mongering when we are concerned about importing potential terrorists into this country?
You know, I think that's always the case when you're dealing with refugee populations fleeing from wars. You have to have, obviously, screening procedures in place to make sure who's coming in. We have a very extended process here in the United States.
It runs about
a year and a half to 2 years.
Right. So then why are we getting refugees now? Because there's... Have they been screening these people then for 2 years?
I'm not sure where they're being held when they come in here, but they're
certainly... they're not being held. They're basically being... They were turned loose in New Orleans. They turned like 120 loose New Orleans. They've already lost two of them. They can't find where two of them already went to. So they've already lost track of some of them.
I'd like to think after the screening process has taken place...
Well, no, but the point is if it takes 18 to 24 months...
Right.
Have they been held... I mean, have they been like at a UN camp for 18 months being screened? Because the real problem... which is being brought up in part of the bill that was passed overwhelmingly by both the House and the Senate this week with a veto-proof majority in the House, was for tougher requirements and documentation on the Syrian refugees, tougher screening processes. And the president said he will veto it as racist. But how do you screen people from a country that is basically in disarray, that we have no access to any population databases, birth records, death records, any sort of driver's licenses? We have no records. So how do you screen people like this?
I think that's one of the great challenges, which is why it takes so much time. But you can go back through looking at cell records, phone, you know, whatever kind of documentation you can get. Obviously, those are records that need to be gone through.
You think Syrian Mobile is giving up cell records?
I think you can still go back and track. You can still track a person's history and thumbprint. It's not easy to completely erase a person's existence.
Well, it's not the question of existing. It's just that the records don't really seem to exist. And if the sole purpose or the sole criteria for allowing somebody in or not into this country is based upon their cell phone records.
No, I'm not saying. Yeah, but we're not saying that's the sole thing. But you put this together. That's why you do it in kind of a forensic research kind of way, where you go back through and you try and piece together all of the things and make sure that they add up.
But
you do everything you can to see.
True, but in many ways, this is like doing a forensic investigation of a murder with no body. You don't know how he died. You don't know where he died. You don't have a cause of death. You just know you've got somebody who's dead. And that's kind of the problem here, is you really don't have the records to do this. In the olden days, we didn't really screen people. We pretty much had open borders in the 1880s, 1890s. And nowadays, we actually try to patrol our borders at some point. And I don't think it's really wise to let people in when you can't really adequately screen them. And that's becoming, that's on a popularity point. The president's in the minority as far as standing against the American people, shall we say, on this. There's also been this thing going around about there's been this battle on how many of these people are male and how many of them are military age male. The administration's right. been trying to pitch a story that 2% of these refugees are military age males. But if you go to the numbers, even that the UN Human Rights Commission has, they quote the breakdown from one site that I've seen from theirs is 49% male, 51% female. And of those, about 25% total are what you would consider to be military age males. The one of the UN officials stated that 62% of the refugees coming into Europe are male. So that doesn't really tie with the administration's numbers of 2%, and it's not even close to tying to that. So
yeah, I can't imagine.
Do we catch administration in another fib?
I can't imagine that only 2% are males of military age. I mean, that seems to me to be somewhat of an absurd number. You need to, military age could be anywhere from, 13 years old in the Middle East to...
We like to think 18 to 35, but yeah, in real purposes, 14 to 40 probably.
Well, you could certainly serve, hold a gun and serve your country at a much younger or much older age.
I think there were soldiers as young as 12 in the Civil War, unfortunately, but... Not something we would like
right,
to
right, no question
advocate.
About it.
And I think Hitler put 12- and 14-year-olds in service, too, at the end.
Obviously, I'm not privileged to all of the things that our intelligence agencies are doing. We have more intelligence agencies than we even recognize or understand.
But do we really
have
a lot of intelligence?
Having intelligence, that's kind of a judgment statement. But
isn't there a joke that the largest the largest oxymoron is military intelligence?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. We like to kid about that. But our intelligence services do a remarkable job.
No, they actually do. And I wasn't trying to mock them. My apologies.
I understand. But, we have to allow them to do their job. They have a very tough mission. But we have to go forth with the confidence that they will do it to the best of their ability. And we will... exercise our responsibilities to ourselves in national security, but also our responsibilities as human beings to do everything that we can to ensure that people who are entitled to receive safe haven here in the United States do that, and at the same time to ensure that we keep out those who would do us harm. I think part of the problem that we're seeing in France now is that they have had such a segregation, if you will, Muslim population.
Right, but it's not really segregated. They're not being put into
the
townships like Lesotho or something.
No, they're not.
They're by choice isolating themselves. They're not integrating.
Yes, but what we've seen in France, and we had the
not assimilating either.
We had the employment issue in France a couple of years ago, where people who are born in France but of Middle Eastern or
Algerian,
Muslim
probably,
or Arabic descent have a far greater unemployment rate in France than do their historically French counterparts. And that's caused a lot of resentment and a lot of isolationism.
Which makes them ripe for terrorist targets.
Which
or
makes
ripe
them,
for terrorist recruitment, I should say.
Yes,
sorry.
Which makes them ripe for terrorist recruitment because they don't feel a part of France.
They don't feel a part of anything.
So, a large part, as much as we talk about the issue of refugees coming into France, I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing in France are a result of their policies over the last generation or two.
So one quick thing to close this up, because of the outcry by a number of the governors, who basically there are about 30 governors that have said, including some Democratic governors, have said that they will not be taking Massachusetts, and you don't get much more liberal than Massachusetts. The governor said he's not willing to take the Syrian refugees. That they were on a conference call with Homeland Security and whoever is running point for this for the administration, and they said, well, we'd like to be involved in the screening process. No. We would like to basically, okay, then what's the screening process? Can't tell you. This was supposed to be the most transparent administration ever. And they wouldn't even tell American governors what the process is for screening these refugees.
Right.
Doesn't sound very transparent to me.
Well, they need to be transparent with our governors, with their other elected officials.
Well, they're not.
They need to be. Well, they
need to be. I don't
think
Paul Ryan knows how they're screening them even.
They need to be more transparent and share intelligence information where it can be shared. I don't know that everybody who is at a governor's level has the kind of security clearances for all of the information that they like to have, but I think they need to provide as much information as possible so that the governors can respond back to their constituency. This is a federal issue at the end of the day, not a state issue.
No, you are correct on that.
So, that's a real challenge for the governors.
Yes.
But I think they, as much as possible, they need to be included in the process.
But it's a story that will continue because this isn't going to go away. By the way, KX93.5 Laguna Roundtable with your hosts, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari. We're going to move on now I'm going to throw this one to Dr. Ari, to the college campuses embracing of microaggression.
Right.
There has been somewhat of an uprising on college campuses in the last probably 3 or 4 weeks, or probably longer than that, but it's come to light in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And Dr. Ari, though somebody who's involved in education and is, well, better educated than I am with your PhD, please discuss this issue for our listeners.
Well, there's certainly a lot of challenges on campus when we have issues like we've seen at the University of Missouri, where students are upset at some of the racist incidents that have occurred on campus.
And the racist incidents were?
Whether it's people being taunted, people being harassed, people being called names that are inappropriate, whether it's in the kinds of materials that are presented in the classroom. I think we need to be aware
of the kinds of materials presented in classrooms.
Absolutely. I think we need to have some level of awareness that history in this country was not only made by white people. We need to recognize that we have a history of contributions from people across the spectrum, and we need to acknowledge what those contributions
are. We were all taught about George Washington Carver in high school.
Well, George Washington Carver wasn't the only African-American who contributed
to this country. We also learned about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Again, you can pick isolated incidents, but across the board in different fields, we need to look at the history of contributions in different areas, whether it's the history of mathematics that came from Arabia, or whether it's contributions that are made today across the world. We need to learn about it so that people feel included.
I don't think classrooms are saying, we're not going to include this guy because he was black, or we're not going to mention this feat because he was Asian, or, this guy, the Arabs really came up with our numbering system, which is why we call them Arabic numbers, but we're not going to really mention that they're Arabic. They're Christian numbers. Well, we don't really do that. So there's not really, I don't see this, colleges for 30, 40 years have been the bastion of liberalism. They've been teaching liberalism and progressivism throughout the university systems. There isn't like these things are run by old white Republican guys. So, the head of the California system is Janet Napolitano. You can't really get much more left-wing and true believer than Janet Napolitano. So why is this? You've got all of these students rising up claiming that these left-wing colleges aren't left-wing enough or aren't liberal enough or progressive enough or diverse enough. When, I mean, there was an African-American studies department at Cal State Northridge 40 years ago when I went there. Not that I went there 40 years ago, but and there was women's studies there. There was, you know, and state schools aren't generally going to be the most progressive or the quickest to be progressive. So this isn't like something where there isn't any outlet for, and there isn't like, there isn't any group teaching diversity on college campuses. Pretty much as soon as I got out of college, that's all we heard about was diversity, diversity, diversity. I have a friend who went to Occidental, which is in the news this week. And he had a friend who was tossed out of Occidental for saying something about wanting to go have tacos with a Hispanic kid. And that was 30 years ago, right after Barack Obama was there. So diversity on college campuses has been ingrained in the fabric for 30, 40 years. So again, where is this coming from?
Well, a lot of the textbooks are not where they need to be in terms of teaching about different cultures, teaching about different contributions from men and women and people who have whatever challenges that they might have or whatever perspectives they might have. I think that's where we're falling short, is we don't have it. We don't see it in our textbooks. We do see it somewhat in the classroom.
But
it could be done better.
I haven't heard textbooks being brought up by the students. I've heard them claiming that, I mean, pretty much the largest sin right now is for university presidents not to declare their white privilege.
I don't know that that's necessarily considered
That's what they wanted from the university president. He either had to declare his white privilege or leave.
Well,
and how does that help the students? Where are they better off now? How are the Missouri University students, black, white, whatever color you want, whatever ethnicity you want, how are they better off today after running the president out?
Well, hopefully they'll have somebody at the university who's better, more supportive or understanding when incidents do occur on campus to not allow that to be accepted. That we have to respect one another regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, whatever it might
be. Well, but how respectful are the Black Lives Matter students that are going through the Dartmouth library screaming about racism and dragging white students out and or harassing them because they weren't buying in to their Black Lives Matter message?
You know, inappropriate behaviors occur on all sides. And
I don't think studying in a library is really inappropriate behavior.
No. No. What I'm saying is that it doesn't matter. You know, I've heard people who are African-American say that, you know, they can't be racist. No, yeah, you can be racist. You know, just because you're oppressed or you're the recipient of racist behaviors or racist acts doesn't mean that you can't be racist yourself.
Yes, while the liberals want to believe in white privilege, it does not mean that white privilege is only allowed to be amongst those that have white privilege. Yes,
but I think the mistake is not recognizing that privilege occurs in many forms. And when we have advantages in our lives, and let's be honest about it, when you're white in this country, it's easier to get around. It's easier to do things. Maybe not in every neighborhood,
people that are white in Laguna are going to think that they've got it easier than
you can. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is what are our cultural norms. And culturally in this country, you still have an advantage being white. There is a privilege to being white. Just as having tattoos causes people to be disadvantaged, being white causes people to be advantaged.
Well, one's a choice and one's not a choice, though.
Yes, but
okay. Unless you're Michael Jackson.
But the point being that you do have a leg up. You do have an easier path to success when you're white in this country than when you're not. And so we have to recognize that that's not necessarily
opportunity, it's not necessarily
a conscious decision. It's not necessarily a bad thing. But it does play out that way.
Opportunities
and what the Black Lives Matter and the students are trying to achieve is a more equitable playing field. And I think that's what we need to strive. There's no reason why in this country we should act as though we have achieved perfection and there aren't things that we can't improve upon.
Okay,
and that's
okay.
Where we need to work.
Okay, 2 points. One, are these just not a bunch of whiny, spoiled brat kids that are going to very good universities in many cases. Dartmouth, Yale,
yes.
Columbia are all having problems with this. Occidental's one of the top schools on the West Coast. Are these just not whiny, privileged children to get to go to these schools? Because the number of students admitted into those top-flight schools are a minuscule percentage.
Yep.
That are just basically whining about stuff because they've led coddled lives of helicopter parents and participation trophies.
You know, in some cases, that might well be true, but I don't think that's true across the board. You certainly do have people who are whiny and have a sense of entitlement, but that doesn't and shouldn't obscure the fact that a lot of the claims, a lot of the problems that they're having are legitimate problems that need to be addressed.
Okay.
So, you know, just because you do have some people who feel that sense of entitlement, that doesn't mean that some of the claims are not valid.
Again, another story that will continue, and we will probably continue to cover it as it goes forth. Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. Righty Jim and Dr. Ari are going to move to a little local news. The Laguna Beach City Council continued the short-term rental ban this week at the City Council meeting. They've crafted some legislation, or some crafted a proposed permanent ban that they've passed on to the Planning Commission, from my understanding, for verbiage. And the Planning Commission will review it and get back to the council on that. I don't know if there is a timetable established. We've discussed this before, Dr. Ari. We're on the opposite sides, as odd as that may be, about this. I believe it's, you know, it's property rights, and you believe that you want a city that's got more regulations than San Francisco on this issue. Mm-hmm. So why don't you go ahead and throw out some thoughts on this and thoughts on the City Council move this week.
You know, I'm in support of the moratorium and hopefully a future ban on private rentals of their property for short-term situations. You know, we have hotels, we have bed and breakfast, which are licensed. And when I live and I purchase a property in a private neighborhood, it affects my enjoyment of my property and my life as
How?
It does my neighbors. I don't want to have to be dealing with noise or calling about people who are rude every incident that occurs. I don't want to have to pick up the phone constantly to call the police to say, you know, they're playing loud music. They're, you know.
Well, what if you allowed a process? A, the people are permitted. They're supposed to be doing it. If they don't have a permit, then they are technically illegal. If you, you know, are
well,
basically
you have,
allowing.
You have Airbnb, which was their lobbying for.
Was there an Airbnb representative there?
I believe there was.
I didn't hear. I think the people were lobbying to use Airbnb. I'm not sure if they were lobbying, if there was an actual representative.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there was a representative. I read the article.
I know a number of people, I believe, had been in touch with Airbnb, and they were encouraged to come out by Airbnb.
And there's something like 300 properties in Laguna that are currently being listed on Airbnb.
So you don't have a problem. We actually now have hired a city employee at $90,000 a year, I believe, to basically spy on people's internet activity and see if they're listing properties illegally on Airbnb. What's next? Are we going to start seeing if people are looking at improper websites?
No, but that's where the advertisement
is. Are we going to start chasing people that use Uber out of town now?
That's
a sharing economy.
But the properties are being advertised on Airbnb on the internet. You need somebody to monitor that to see what's going on in the town, because that's how you find out what properties are being made available.
That's how you enforce a ban.
That's how you
violate people's property rights.
It's not their property rights to rent out their property.
It's their
not for less than 30 days. If that's what the law is, it is not their property rights. And their rights, they don't have a right to just to make money off of their property. We have a right
well,
as
actually,
a community.
They do have a right to make money off their property.
No.
Yes, they do.
Not an unlimited right. They do not. They can not
if
for
you,
less than 30
if you
days.
If you sell your property for more than you've bought it for, you've made money off your property.
But that's not the same thing as renting it to somebody for 2 weeks to come in and do whatever they want and disrupt your neighborhood and everything else.
Okay, but are
their rights don't their rights are not allowed to supersede everyone else's and to trample on their enjoyment of their property,
but
of their life in their home.
If the next door neighbor was Charlie Sheen, okay, and he threw wild parties and had cars all over the place, that would still be the same code violations as the people that are doing the short-term rentals. There are laws in place already in a highly regulated Laguna that cover any sort of properties or any sort of problems with rental properties for occupancy rates, for number of cars, for parking, and for noise. There are already laws that cover that. Just as if you, like I said, had Charlie Sheen living next to you, you'd basically be able to take care of the problem through code enforcement. So why do we need more regulation? Again, San Francisco, which is as, you know, crazy liberal as you're going to find in America, okay, home of Nancy Pelosi and sanctuary cities, they don't consider this to be enough to be banned, okay? So if you're going that far, I'm not really sure you really want, do you really want to live in a city that has more regulations than San Francisco on this issue?
On this issue, absolutely, because the difference is that if somebody has a long-term rental, they're more concerned about living and being in their home. When you have a short-term rental, if you have a short-term rental, less than 30 days, you have this constant turnover. People who are coming in to have a blast.
Okay, but,
and that's great.
Okay, well, you're assuming
people to come in.
You're sounding like Clint Eastwood, get off my lawn, kid. Second of all, or you and I'm classifying you as part of the group in general.
Okay.
Second of all, you know, in many cases, this isn't necessarily something where it's like night, you know, where they flip every night and they're booked every night. Could very well, there could be someone there for a week and then no one there for 2 weeks, right, and then someone there for 3 days and no one there for a week and then someone there for 2 days. So it's not like they're basically running at 100% occupancy, because no one really has the luxury of doing that, even if they were efficient at what they're doing.
But should we not have any zoning regulations?
We have zoning regulations. Well, we have code enforcement.
And then we should have, and then there's no reason why we shouldn't have the same thing for private properties that are renting out in a residential community, renting them out for short term. We have hotels. If you want to come visit Laguna, come have a great time. We
so basically, you're against the poor. So you're against the poor widower who basically needed to supplement after her husband passed away and her loss of income, was able to supplement her income and able to stay in Laguna and pay for her property. You think she's an evil person who needs to be thrown in jail because the poor widow doesn't
absolutely
have enough money
not
coming?
And let's not couch this in terms of her being an evil
person. But that's an actual case of someone that stood up and spoke at the city council.
Well, personally, I don't find it to be evil person, but she's not allowed to.
So who's throwing grandma under the bus now?
She's not entitled to use her property to make money when it's causing a problem for neighbors.
So, okay, I think this is somewhere we're going to have to agree to disagree. Is that right, Dr.
Oh, yeah.
Roy?
Well, you know, let's add it to the list.
All right. Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. We're going to take a short music break here with Duke Ellington, a little bit out of the norm, for Paris Blues, in honor or in sympathy with the unfortunate events in Paris last week. Guess what, folks? Yes, we will be back in a couple of minutes. Laguna Roundtable. right, folks, we are back. Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5 with your hosts, Righty Jim and Dr. R.E. Grayson. You can reach us on social media at Righty Jim for Twitter, Laguna Roundtable for Facebook, and you can always email us your cards, questions, and letters. For those of you that are Ohio State fans, please entitle that Ohio State Fan, Attention Dr. Ari, to lagunaroundtable@gmail.com. So, Dr. Ari, we got a couple of local events coming up. Why don't you talk about Hospitality Night?
Laguna being Laguna, we're into the middle of our entertainment and hospitality season. Absolutely love this one. On Friday, December 4th, from 5 to 9, we have Hospitality Night. So we have the traditional tree lighting ceremony over at City Hall. Then, of course, we have all of our shops with their open doors and inviting our locals and visitors in to enjoy their wares. And they'll have drinks and cookies and so forth. We also have Santa coming down Forest Avenue.
And I believe possibly we'll have KX93.5 broadcasting from there.
Oh, wonderful. I hope so.
Possibly. We have in the past. I don't know if we are. We'll need to talk with Tyler to confirm that. I'm sure Tyler will announce that on Morning Scramble with Tyler and Jason Fetty every Monday morning, Santa, 7 to 10.
Santa will be setting up at his Winter Beach house here in Laguna Beach right there on Forest Avenue.
Well, Santa's got it pretty good. So is Santa renting for the short term or long term?
He'll be there for more than 30 days.
Okay,
so he's going to be safe.
We wouldn't want the city of Laguna to throw Santa in jail.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I believe he owns his property. So,
okay.
So that notwithstanding. And next Saturday, on November 28th, we have Shop Local, Small Business Saturday. So go out and support your local Laguna Beach merchants. As most of you know, we have very, very few large corporate businesses here. So go out and support your local Laguna businesses and spend your money wisely.
And speaking of KX93.5 and local events, we will be hosting KX93.5, the Winter Concert Classic, December 13th, 5 p.m., Irvine Bowl, Pageant of the Masters, presented by the Montage Laguna Beach and KX93.5, featuring, drumroll please, Kenny Loggins. Yes, that's right, the Danger Zone. Thank you, all you Top Gun fans. Come on out and watch Kenny Loggins, the Shadow Boxers, and David Allen Barker. Tickets are available. It's just outside the amphitheater. Will be a winter wonderland where kids can delight in holiday activities, falling snow, a cookie decorating contest, a visit from Old Saint Nick. I guess he'll have to drag himself up from his long-term rental and come up there for that after Hospitality Night. With adult libations and additional beverages available for purchase, there will be complimentary hot chocolate and holiday treats for all. So you can get your tickets at KX935 on our homepage. There'll be a link to it. But come one, come all, you know that we are a community-supported radio station. And events like this are what allow you to have fine programs like Dr. R.E. Grayson, Righty Jim, and Laguna Roundtable on the air every morning, including our Morning Scramble every week with Tyler and Jason Fetty. And coming up next, Full English Breakfast with Jason Fetty. Jason has a thing for food, doesn't he?
Yeah, apparently he
does. Morning Scramble, Full English Breakfast?
Absolutely, unless you've had a Full English Breakfast, then you understand the...
Yeah, you don't really want a Full English Breakfast, but...
But you know what's not happening this holiday season? I think it's worth noting to
our
listeners.
Yes, it is, actually. I think I know where you're going with this.
Montage is not having
their
annual...
Yeah, they're tree lighting, which is disappointing. That's a great event.
It's a phenomenal event.
I love that event.
They're tremendously warm and inviting to the community, and I tip my hat to them. But this year they're doing a lot of renovations, and they didn't feel that they were able to safely accommodate the kind of crowds that they normally
get. Well, they are co-sponsoring the concert, the Kenny Loggins concert, so maybe that's their commitment to the maybe they could do the tree lighting at the concert. That would have been worked out neat.
That would be very nice. So maybe we need to make that suggestion to them.
Yes.
But, you know, they've always been a great supporter of our community. They really have made themselves a wonderful part of our community.
Yeah, I've come to, like, the last two or three, and it's a wonderful event.
It really is. So hopefully next year, 2016, we'll be able to celebrate the holidays there.
Moving on to our topic segment real quickly, because we run a little bit late, because we've been a little bit verbose, as usual.
Well, that's me, usually. But
yeah, this is true. This is true. How to beat ISIS. With the attacks in Paris. Now, the attack in Mali was al-Qaeda, wasn't ISIS. But it brings up the question of how do you beat people that are willing to die for their beliefs, that are basically going on a religious crusade to promote their brand of Islamic fundamentalism through Islamic terrorism? How do you fight those types of people that are willing to die for that? You know, number of the points that they're – well, actually, Dr. Arby, let me throw it to you. What are your thoughts on this real quick?
Well, you know, my thoughts on this is that – First of all, we need to have a broad education so that people who are susceptible to this kind of thinking begin to understand and better see that this is not a movement that is going to ever be widespread and accepting of anyone else, that they're narcissistic in their behaviors. They're destroying cultures that have existed for thousands of years, or cultural relics that have existed for thousands of years. They don't seem to be able to coexist with anybody. It's a movement of hatred and destruction, not of acceptance and of building something. They're not building anything, as much as they want to pretend that they're building some sort of Islamic caliphate or Islamic state ruling the world. These are hateful and as awful as they come as human beings. Israel dealt with this for a long time.
And still deals
kind of,
with it.
Well, with suicide.
And they built a wall, which has solved a lot of the problem.
Well, with suicide bombings. But when Israel built the wall, they were immediately accused of creating an apartheid state. And I think that was a serious mistake because they were keeping out people who are walking in with
heavy coats and suicide bomber
with suicide vests and causing a tremendous amount of destruction. Now, they built it. I don't want to digress too much into Israel's situation.
Well, okay. Well, let me digress real quick.
But I think the bottom line in all of this is that we need to recognize, we need to accept that in a free and an open society, a person can walk down the street with a gun, with homemade explosive devices, whatever it might be.
Yeah, but most places open carry is perfectly illegal.
But they can cause death and destruction to dozens, if not hundreds, of people. And that's the very simple reality of how we live in this world. I mean, look at the Boston bombers. They took pressure cookers.
Yeah.
Went into a crowded situation. That's why I think we're so concerned. That's why I know we're so concerned about some of the athletic events where we have, you know, 50.
Also, why we're concerned with Syrian immigrants coming in,
100,000 refugees. That's another issue.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, you can't change who you are as a nation in order to
fight this. Let me go real quickly
this.
To a comment by John Kerry when he reached Paris last week. I don't know if he's going to bring James Taylor with him again or not.
Okay.
But basically, he made the quote that he was talking about the attacks. And he said, one of the things he said was, this is different from Charlie Hebdo. Charlie Hebdo had a rationale to it. Can you explain what he was saying in that?
Yeah, very simple. You know, Charlie Hebdo was
with the attacks
an incident
back in January.
That was back in January.
In
as a result of cartoons. So there was something at least
as a result of Islamic terrorists not liking the cartoons.
But there was something identifiable that people were responding to, rightly or wrongly, okay? I think it's a sickness to respond to cartoons like that, okay, in any manner where you're causing injury to others. I mean, this was an idea, however insulting you might personally or find it to be to your religion. Whereas the hotel was just walking into a place where there's opportunity to just kill people randomly.
Or the attacks were just random in the Paris where they just were shooting up a restaurant. Or
right.
Trying to blow up people in the Stade de France.
So I think, you know, even though the rationale might be sick in our mind and unjustifiable by any standard, there was a rationale to it. It's not this randomness that we see.
Well, we're not going to be able to probably solve this one this morning in the show.
No, but I'd like to hear what do you think we should do to keep safe from people like ISIS?
Oh, I think we'll save that for another episode. We're running a little late,
okay.
Unfortunately.
All right.
But I do have some ideas on that. It involves pigskin. So we'll just put that in your
mind. We'll leave it at that.
On the table, Dr. Ari, why don't you go ahead with fear itself?
Okay, I'm Ari, and I'm putting fear itself on the table. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. These words were etched indelibly in the American psyche in 1933 by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Fear can lead people to engage in behaviors that are often counter to their values and even their best interests. After the attacks on 9/11, the United States engaged in prisoner abuse at Iraq's infamous Abu Ghraib prison and in torturous behaviors such as waterboarding. At best, these behaviors are a stain on America's proud history of respect for human rights. At worst, they're war crimes and in gross violation of the Geneva Conventions. Unfortunately, our descent into darkness neither begins or ends there. During the periods of World War I and World War II, German nationals were automatically classified as enemy aliens. Japanese and Italians, U.S. citizens and non-U.S. citizens alike, were placed in internment camps. This behavior was driven by war and by fear of those not like us. Fear of others, the Jewish population, delayed and prevented the United States from saving countless people. In 1939, a group of more than 900 Jewish people fleeing from Nazi Germany on a ship named the St. Louis docked in Havana, Cuba. Most of the passengers on the St. Louis were turned away. As their ship turned back towards Europe, passengers could see the glittering lights of Miami. Some of them even cabled President Franklin Roosevelt, begging to be allowed into the United States. They were forced to return to Europe, where 254 of them were eventually killed in the Holocaust. Just as political figures today warn of ISIS fighters slipping into the United States by posing as Syrian refugees, many top U.S. officials at the time warned that Nazi Asians would infiltrate the country by posing as Jewish refugees. This week, Roanoke, Virginia Mayor David Bauer spoke out against the resettlement of Syrian refugees in Roanoke, citing as precedent the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, two-thirds of whom were American citizens, an event which the American government formally apologized in 1988. Bowers used World War II internment of citizens was as bad an idea as Donald Trump ludicrously citing President Eisenhower's deportation of Mexicans during the late 1950s in what was known at the time as Operation Wetback, as precedent for Trump's own deportation and expulsion plan. So although we must remain constantly vigilant, we must also constantly remind ourselves why we are a great nation and what makes us special. Our respect for human life and the ability to conduct ourselves accordingly, despite our fears. As Benjamin Franklin said, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Let's not get so consumed by fear for safety that we forget about liberty. I'm Ari, and I just put fear itself on the table.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ari. Actually, we're running a little bit late. I'm not going to be able to do mine. I'll tape it, and we'll put it up on the website or put it up on our podcast. Don't forget, KX93.5 has a new website, so take a look there. All of our podcasts are available there, along with our On the Table segments. So, Dr. Ari, from Dr. Ari and myself, have a good day. And Full English Breakfast with Jason Fetty is up next. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Happy Turkey Day.
Enjoy Thanksgiving. We're going to take next week off and enjoy with our families. You guys do as well. And hopefully we'll have you back in 2 weeks.
Well, listen to our tape, though, if you get the time.